Welcome to another episode of Strewn Along the Path. Here for another Netflix queue episode where I talk about various movies that I've seen on Netflix or could be other types of streaming services or different ways that I've acquired movies. But it started out as the Netflix queue, and I'd say the majority of the movies that I talk about on these episodes is from Netflix. Let me think. Yes, all three episodes that I talk about today are definitely from Netflix, so there you go. I guess there's some association between these movies that I'm reviewing. Two of them have Sylvester Stallone involved in it. And I guess the other common thread is that they're all sequels of one form or another. And so, there you go. This is the sequel episode, I guess. I know there's... These days, most every movie that you see is a sequel. So there you go. So the first movie I'm going to talk about today is Creed 2. And I just have to talk about it. I just saw it last night. It's a really good movie. I was really impressed. I liked the first Creed. Of course, as you know, or maybe you don't. But Creed is a continuation of the Rocky movies. But they do live up to the name. It's not all about Rocky. It's not another Rocky movie. It has Rocky in it, and it references, you know, those past fights, especially this one, those past movies. So it definitely is a continuation of that series and you know, follows with that history. But it isn't about Rocky. Yes, he's in it. Yes, he's a supporting character, and he has his own kind of story arc going through it. But it's all about Adonis Creed, played by Michael B. Jordan. It's about his fighting. It's about his life and the things that drive him. And of course, and I don't think I've ever talked about the first movie, Creed, here on the podcast. And to be honest, I remembered some key things from it, but I didn't remember exactly what the fights were and how it all went. When I started watching Creed 2, I remembered that, yes, Adonis Creed is Apollo Creed's son. He was, I guess, an illegitimate son of Apollo Creed. But eventually, Apollo's wife, even though it wasn't her biological son, got him out of foster care because he had a lot of problems and took care of him and pretty much became his mother, played by Felicia Rashad, who's an amazing actress. I mean, just, you know, she has a strong presence. You don't second guess her character. You know, she's very firm in what she's doing. And so this was the first movie. This was Creed. And he also has a love interest, Bianca. She's a singer. And she's played by Tessa Thompson. And it's really nice to see her here in this movie compared to in... like Thor Ragnarok and Avengers Endgame, where she's playing Valkyrie. That's a very different type of character, and it's more superficial, right? I mean, she doesn't get as much screen time, and it's a pretty stock kind of thing. Not that she doesn't do a good job as Valkyrie, because I really like her as that. But in this movie, and in the first Creed movie, you really get to see how good of an actress she is. She does a great job. I really love how they portray that relationship between Adonis and Bianca. It's truly a loving relationship. They truly care for one another. You know, even though when hard times are coming or things are going wrong, and maybe, you know, there's a time in this movie where Adonis needs his distance. He needs his time to get his groove back, kind of thing. You don't ever think that he doesn't love her. And you can always tell that she's there behind him. And they have real conversations. They're really a team rather than, you know, I mean, I loved it back in the day with the Rocky movies. But it was always a strange relationship, I thought, between Rocky and Adrian. Of course, you know, she was more of a not a submissive character. What's the word I'm looking for? As a character and as a person, Adrian was definitely more subdued. And another word, I'm blanking on it right now. in the later Rocky movies, you did get to see her be more of an actress and be a stronger character. But in the first couple movies, you know, she's very withdrawn, and Rocky kind of brings her out of that shell a little bit. But it's great to see Bianca ringside with Michael Jordan, supporting him, giving him the energy that he needs, rather than hiding in the back. And, you know, Adonis doesn't have to yell, "Bianca!" you know, to get her to come up. She's right there. She's with him. In fact, in the last fight, and there's going to be lots of spoilers in this, so just get ready for that. But in the last fight of this, she even comes out with him and walks down to the ring and is singing a song. It's just kind of neat to see that. It's a totally different dynamic than what you had with Rocky and Adrian. So anyway, what's the main plot line? So the main plot line is Ivan Drago has a son, and he's raised his son and trained his son to be the ultimate fighter. Well, okay, not, he's a boxer. He's not an ultimate fighter, but anyway, he's pretty much, you can tell, they don't show you the whole story, but basically their regimen is, you're going to fight, you're a boxer, you know, you run fast when I tell you to run fast. He's pretty much bred his son to be the fighter that I guess he wasn't. Even though he was a good fighter, he just lost his fight to Rocky in Rocky IV. But of course, Ivan Drago is the one who killed, in the ring, Apollo Creed. And so there's that backstory. You know, Adonis is his son, and Ivan killed his dad, essentially, even though he didn't know his dad and never met him. There's that history there. And so they play on that so much, and it's really good. And, you know, this movie follows all the formulas of a Rocky movie, right? I mean, it's pretty much Rocky 3, where Rocky loses the fight with Mr. T, or what was his name? Clubber Lang. And then he has to find the Eye of the Tiger, right? That's that whole thing. You need to find the Eye of the Tiger. And I'm kind of proud of them that they didn't use that term in this movie, because it was very much the beats were pretty much the same in this movie. But it was done so well, man. It's amazing how much, because I thought about this after the movie was over. I'm like, this was pretty much a textbook Rocky movie. You have a fight against an enemy that wants it bad. You lose part of yourself. You lose your drive to fight, and you have to dig it up again. And you have to go in and fight your fears and overcome and have a rematch. And then he wins in the end. Spoiler. But it's not, man, I don't know how to explain it. Even though the beats are the same, even though the storyline is the same, it's different. Of course, it's a different director. You know, this is 2019. The movie came out in 2018. And so it's not an 80s movie. You're going to go extreme train to get ready for this title match, you know, for the second fight in some extreme conditions, you know. They have the training montage. Of course, it's a Rocky movie, even though it's Creed. It's a Rocky movie. So they have the training sequence of both fighters training for the fight. And they had to go extreme to pull Adonis out of his lack of confidence, out of his pride, out of his insecurities, all that kind of stuff. He needs to dig deep, and he does. And it's believable. And the fights are amazing to watch. The way that they film it, it's not the same as Rocky. It's done better, but it's still the same. I mean, it's amazing how much punishment these guys take. I mean, it's just brutal. And I don't know, boxing is brutal in and of itself, but come on. I mean, if people were getting hit the way they display in this movie, they'd be dead. But anyway, Ivan Drago's son, Victor Drago, he's a big boy, man. I mean, he's huge, and he's got long arms, and Adonis is pretty small compared to him. And so anyway, Dolph Lundgren as Ivan Drago, I thought for some reason that he would be a likable character in this, you know, even though there was the fight and you have to build up the drama. I thought he would be a likable character, but he's, man, I didn't like him at all in this movie. You know, basically his storyline is after he lost to Rocky, nobody in Russia supported him. He lost his wife. People just disrespected him because he lost. And so he's pretty much lost everything in his life, and it ruined him. And so now he's, like I said, he's trained his son to be this ultimate fighter, even though I know I'm using that term wrong. He's built him to be this boxing machine and to be ruthless. And he's not nice to his son. He says, you need to bring honor. If you lose, that's the reason that your mother isn't around. And just, he just really psychologically abuses his son this way. And, you know, pretty much everything is hinging on him winning. If he doesn't win, he's worth nothing. Pretty much doing the same thing that he's suffered after his loss. He's not a likable character. At the end of the movie, he breaks a little bit and he's there for his son. And he says, it's okay. And he throws in the towel. And they have a really neat shot of him just running with his son. Before, he was always making his son run, but he's out there with him now. So he does kind of have a redemption that, hey, he realizes what he was doing was wrong. He realizes he loves his son and the pressure he was putting on him wasn't fair. And so that's nice that they put that in there at the end. But again, I didn't like his character in the movie, and I thought I would, but Duff Lundgren does a good job for the role. Everybody does. Sylvester Stallone does a great job again. So I guess let me get out of the way. So anyway, the Dragos come to Philadelphia and they challenge Adonis to fight Victor. And, you know, they have all the rhetoric. And there's this promoter that went to Russia and kind of said, hey, why don't we do this kind of thing? You know, he wants to fight Adonis Creed. Because at the beginning of the movie, Adonis did become the heavyweight champion of the world. He won a title fight and became the world champion. And then right after that, that's when the Dragos came and they challenged him to a fight. And so this, you know, in Drago's mind, this is a way for him to be redeemed. If his son becomes the heavyweight champion of the world, he'll be redeemed. So Adonis wants to do the fight. And then Ivan Drago comes to see Rocky and says, hey, you know, this is what's going to happen kind of thing. So they have their little moment together. But Rocky says, you know, he's been raised on hate. He's out there to kill you. Your father died. Is it worth it? Why are you doing this fight? And, you know, he just feels like he has to do it, but he doesn't have a good reason why. A lot of it's pride, I'm sure, and feelings about losing his dad and that he might feel that he has to redeem his dad, or I don't know how you would say that. But so he takes the fight, but Rocky, he says, I can't do it. You're going to have to do it without me. So he doesn't go. They move to L.A., and he gets trained up there in the same gym that Apollo did. It's not the same coach, but when he fights Drago, and he just gets beat hard. But he doesn't lose the championship because he gets taken out by a sucker punch, an illegal punch. When he's down on his knees, Drago just gives him a huge uppercut and takes him out. So he's knocked out, but he's disqualified. Drago's disqualified. And so Adonis keeps his belt, but he really got beaten down. I mean, he's got broken ribs. He's ruptured kidney, I think, you know. So, yeah, he's really in a rough shape. And he feels betrayed by Rocky. You know, Rocky tries to come and say, I'm sorry, or to you know, and he's not nice to Rocky. And he's in a bad spot. He never takes it out on Bianca. You know, he's never a jerk to her, but he is cut off. And there's a great conversation between Bianca and Felicia Rashad. Marianne Creed, I guess is her name. But she's like, you know what? You've been there with him through everything. You have done everything you can for him. He needs to overcome this himself. Don't take it personally. But of course, that's hard to do. But I like that Bianca's not just this submissive wife, and she's more than that. She's powerful and she's there for him, but she wants him to be there for her and her daughter and their daughter. And she says that. So eventually he finds his desire to box again, and he says, I have to have a rematch. I have to fight him again. And she's like, why? Why do you have to do that? And she says, you know, I don't want to be the person that stops you from doing these things. And she's not, but she says, I don't want to be like your mother. I don't want to be alone in the world. And so, man, there's so many things that go back to that movie, and they do it in a really good way.
Hooks, and we're underway. Oh, and Drago comes out swinging with two hooks that Creed avoids.
Sorry if I repeat myself. That's one of the dangers of recording this in installments instead of all at once. But, yeah, so Adonis was in a bad place after losing to Victor Drago. But, you know, eventually Brianna has the baby, and they do find out that she is deaf, because if you remember from the first Creed movie, we find out that Bianca is nearly deaf, but she uses hearing aids and she's able to still do her music. Anyway, but they're both afraid that the baby's going to be deaf. It turns out that she is. So they're going through that, but they're kind of coming through it, you know, even though Adonis still hasn't totally recovered and hasn't really got his head right again for fighting or training. You know, he did go to the gym at one point, but he was just in his car. And the coach came out and talked to him and said, hey, why don't you just come in and hit the bag for a while? You know, no big deal. And he said, yeah, I'll be in there in a minute. And then he left. He wasn't able to go in and train. But anyway, there's this scene where, you know, Bianca's been taking care of the baby. She says, you know what? I need to get out of the house. I'm going to go to the studio. I'm going to do some recording. I'm going to do some stuff. Can you please take care of the baby? And he's like, yeah, of course. But you can tell he's kind of unsure of himself. He's never been left alone with a baby before. But it's a really, really good sequence, because as soon as Bianca leaves, the baby starts crying. And he can't get her to stop. And she just keeps crying. And he calls his mom and says, hey, I don't know what to do. Please give me a call back. You know, whether you've been a parent or not, you've probably been in a situation where you've been with a baby and the baby won't stop crying. And no matter what you do, the baby's not crying. You don't know what it needs. You know, you try to change its diaper. You make sure it's been fed. I'm saying it's because in this case, it's a her. And so, you know, you don't know what she needs. Does she need a diaper change? So you try that. You rock them. You bounce them. You sing to them. You know, whatever you can do, you try to show them things. Try to catch their attention, make them laugh, anything that you can do. But when they're really small, well, not only when they're really small, but anyway, they just cry. They need something, or they're just upset, and there's really nothing you can do other than just deal with it. You just have to endure the crying child, and you do what you can and try different things. But, I mean, there's just a wall there where you just have to be there and be with the baby while it's crying. There's nothing you can do. And that's you feel helpless, you feel inadequate, you know, and it's just one of those testing moments for a parent, or, you know, if you're watching a child, it's a very testing moment. And he's doing his best, you know, but eventually he goes to the gym. It's all, you know, locked up and dark at night, but he goes in there, supposedly he has a key. And by that time, the baby's quieted down a little bit, but he sets her down on the ring and, you know, just kind of looking around, and starts hitting the bag a little bit, and hits a little more, gets some frustration out, screams a little bit, and then he's, oh, sorry. He doesn't want to make the baby start crying again. But, and then, you know, after he's done with that, you know, he goes back home, and when Bianca comes back, he's just laying on the floor with the baby on his chest, and the baby's not crying, the baby's sleeping or soothed or, you know, whatever. And Bianca just comes down and lays next to him, and they start to talk. And it's just to me, that's a beautiful scene. It's very loving, it's very natural, it's very human. And it's just a quiet moment, and it's done really well. That whole sequence, I thought, I just felt for these people, and it's the acting and the directing and just everything was just right. It's just good quality movie making, good storytelling. Anyway, I don't know if I said this already, but you know, one of the biggest themes that I took from this movie was being a father. You see it in several different things. You know, Adonis becomes a father, and he takes on that responsibility, and he like I said in this scene, you know, he learns how to be a dad and how to deal with the baby that has needs. That there's, you know, it's a never-ending job, especially when they're little. And then you have, you know, like I said, this father-son relationship between Ivan and Victor Drago, and it's not a good one, but at the very end it is good. And you know, you have a sense of hope that hey, these two guys have come to a reckoning. He's more open, more sharing his love. Ivan was kind of hooked up on getting Russia to love him again, and his wife to love him again. And there's a dinner scene where Ivan and Victor are at this big dinner table in Russia, and his mother, played by Brigitte Nielsen, comes in. She was in Rocky IV as well. And it's great that they could get all these people back for these movies. But anyway, so she's there and she just says hi to her son, but just very cold. And Victor can't take it, and he leaves the table, and Ivan goes after him and says, "You can't do this, that we're our guests." And he's like, "Dad, they cast you aside. He doesn't like what they've done to his dad. He doesn't like that it's all on him," and he's expressing that to his dad. And then at the end of the fight, and I know I haven't talked about the big fight, but Ivan finally gets it. He's like, "You know what? This is my son. I don't care about the glory of Russia. I don't care about anything else. This is my son." And he sees past the hate and the pain and everything else, and he starts to love his son. He says, "It's okay. It's okay." And then at the end, you see him running together. And before, it was always the dad driving and then pushing the son on and just, you know, being so demanding. But that's gone away at the end. And so, like I said, even though I didn't like Ivan Drago, there is that moment. And so that father and son relationship is there. And then, my goodness, it's so unexpected. I mean, the whole time, the thing with Rocky, you know, like when he was kind of arguing with Adonis, when he said, "I'm not going to be there for you if you decide to do this fight." You know, Adonis is like, "Hey, I've been here for you. I'm the only one who's been here for you in your life. What are you doing? Where's your son? Why haven't you contacted your son? What's going on?" And it was funny, just before he said that, I was thinking to myself, whatever did happen to the son? Did they say anything about him in the first Creed? I don't think so. You know, those are kind of the thoughts I had. And so when Adonis brought it up, I'm like, "Oh, yeah, what is going on with your son, Rocky?" And so anyway, he's like, "Well, I've tried to call him 100 times, but I always hang up because I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do." He says, "You know, my grandson was born and I wasn't even there." And so he's got all these regrets with his son. But then, and then, you know, so that whole thing was going on. When Adonis was in the hospital, you know, Rocky went to call his son, but he hung up again. But at the very end, after the fight and everything, one of the last scenes is Rocky. You think he's going home, or at least I did. I thought he was done, left L.A., went back to Philadelphia. But instead of being at his house, he's at his son's house. And he knocks on the door, and his son doesn't know he's coming, and the grandson. Man, I'm getting emotional now just thinking about it. Sorry about this. The grandson opens the door, and Rocky says, "Oh, you must be whatever his name was." And the boy says, "Yeah, that's me. Who are you?" And Rocky doesn't know what to say. And then his son comes in, says, "Hey, who's at the door?" And he says, "I don't know." And the son comes in, he sees it's his dad. And the son, they just kind of look at each other for a little bit. And then the son looks at him with pride and he says, "This is your grandfather." And he asks his dad, "Do you want to come in?" Rocky just doesn't say anything. He doesn't know what to say. He's just kind of crying. And he comes in and he gives his son a big hug. And I was just bawling like I'm doing now. That scene just really hit me really hard. And it's not even a movie about Rocky. I mean, he's in there, like I said, but this is about Adonis Creed. And, but yeah, you know, Rocky's there too. And it's a movie about where he's at in his life. And then again, right after that, we have Adonis at the graveside of his dad, Apollo Creed. And he says, you know I've never been here. And he's, I always kind of feel weird when people are in movies or talking to the gravesites. I guess that's just not something I've done. Or, you know, I mean, I've gone to visit the gravesite of my dad and my grandpa and other people, but I don't spend a lot of time there. I just, you know, think about them a little bit and, you know, make sure their gravesite looks nice and I leave. You know, I've never sat there and talked. And it's not a bad thing. It's kind of neat that, that people can do that and that, you know, they can kind of feel close to their, those that have died. But I always kind of feel awkward watching that. But it was a nice moment for Adonis to kind of, he'd never talked to his dad. He never met his dad. And so he's kind of talking to him and he says, let me introduce you to someone. And Bianca and his daughter come over, you know, and it's just, to me, the underlying message that I got from this movie, yes, it's about boxing. Yes, it's about overcoming, being defeated and winning the championship or winning against your foe and, you know, pulling that will out. I mean, that's a Rocky thing, right? But there's so much more to these movies. I mean, and let me tell you, the boxing and the fights were intense as well. The way they filmed those was amazing. And I really got into the fights and, you know, it's just that whole boom, 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 you know, and they played the classic Rocky music at the right time, of course. And it just gets you, you know, you just hear that music and you're like, yes, yes, you know, and it's so good. So good. You know, when Adonis is training, when Rocky takes him out in the desert and they're training, he teaches them to get up close because that's the only way he's going to beat Victor. And, you know, it works, but man, he still gets beat on by Victor, but he gets in a lot of good hits to Victor too. And I thought one of the coolest things was the same thing happened with Clubber Lang. I think the announcers are saying, you know, he's getting tired. Cause you know, Victor was so strong and so powerful in the ring. He's hardly ever had to go beyond three rounds. He always just boom, 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 knocks these people out. I think the first fight between Adonis and Victor was only, what, three rounds, maybe? Yeah, I think it was in the third round when he kicked him out. And then all the other, you know, practice fights that you see Victor doing, he just goes in, bam, 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 knocks the guy out, right? So, yeah, after 6, 7, 8, 9 rounds, you know, he's getting tired. He's never had to do that before, that physical endurance. So, yeah, the fighting was great, but all this personal stuff was great. I just really enjoyed the movie, you know. It was kind of later at night, and my wife was getting tired. She goes, oh, that's a lot of talking. Which, you know, when you're tired, it is hard to sit through a lot of the slower moments of a movie. But, man, I was eating it up. I loved every part of it. And I loved all the actors, and it was great. I couldn't recommend it enough. It's one of the best movies I've seen in a long time. So, yeah, Creed 2. And Rich told me it was good. You know, I had talked to him a few weeks ago. And I said, yeah, man, I got Creed 2 coming from Netflix. Have you seen it? Is it good? And he says, oh, yeah, man, I love Creed 2. And I'm like, oh, well, that's encouraging. I don't know what I expected. I hadn't heard anything bad about it, but I just hadn't heard much about it. I guess I didn't seek it out because I hadn't seen the movie. But yeah, it was fantastic. So there you go. There's a winner there. And you know, I guess maybe let's stick here with Sylvester Stallone for a little bit. I saw another one of his movies recently, so let's talk about that.
And that's it. It's over. In the towel.
He is still the heavyweight champion of the world.
Okay, so the next movie I'm going to talk about is Expendables 3. The Expendables is kind of along a run that Sylvester Stallone in trying to come back and take over all these roles. You know, he did another sequel to Rambo in like the early 2000s, or maybe it wasn't that long ago, mid-2000s maybe. And then, of course, Rocky is doing a good job of bringing back these roles and kind of getting a second wind in his career. Well, the Expendables franchise is doing the same thing. Basically, The theory behind it is you got a bunch of old action movie stars, and they come back, and they're now the Expendables because they're old and people don't think they're useful. So they're used on these missions where I guess it doesn't matter if they return or not. So that's kind of the shtick of it. I haven't actually watched any except for this third movie. And I don't know. Well, I try not to watch R-rated movies. And so I didn't watch the first two movies because I think both of those are R. And at the same time, I was like, you know, I'm really beyond the action heroes of the 80s. You know, it was great when it was happening, but I really don't need a retread of that. You know, that's pretty much where I was at. And so I didn't care if I saw the Expendables or not. But Expendables 3, they kind of upped the ante for me. They brought back Mel Gibson, who's kind of fell from grace in Hollywood because of his drunken outbursts about Jews and stuff like that, anti-Semitic stuff. And you know, it's been so long since that happened, it probably was pretty bad. I'd have to go back and look at it. But I do believe that, come on, you know, how many other actors, I don't want to get political or anything, but Woody Allen, I mean, come on. People still revere Woody Allen. Maybe not. Maybe he hasn't been around for a while. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But anyway, several actors have done terrible things or said terrible things and kind of come back in the good graces. You know, Robert Downey Jr. is another one. You know, he had drug problems for so long, and they brought him back in as Iron Man, and he's just taken everything by storm, you know, with not only the Marvel movies, but he's done other movies. And so, and I think, if I remember right, Robert Downey Jr. and Mel Gibson are good friends, and they've had, you know, a lot of deep conversations. I think Robert Downey Jr. has tried to help Mel Gibson get work again and kind of go through that whole redemption thing. And yeah, I know he's been back for movies. I know him and Jodie Foster did that puppet one where he was like, could only talk if he was talking as a gopher puppet or something like that. I never saw that movie. And I know he's been back in like Daddy's Home 2. And he came back as a director for Hacksaw Ridge, something like that. I haven't seen that movie. But anyway, so he's kind of come back. But I think, and I'm sure, well, I don't know if anybody will correct me because nobody ever does. But I might come to find out that this was not the first movie that Mel Gibson came back and did. But it's one of the first. So I was intrigued by that because I really like Mel Gibson as an actor. And I don't know what he's really like in person. But I really like him as an actor, and so I was intrigued by this movie. Plus, they brought Harrison Ford in also to be in this movie. And so, and it was PG-13, so I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna rent it. I don't care if I haven't seen the first one or the second one. It probably doesn't matter anyway because it's an action franchise. So it's just gonna be about action. And pretty much I was right. There wasn't much. I mean, you can tell that there's been a history with these characters. Arnold Schwarzenegger is in it as a pilot, but he's kind of on the fringes. And I don't think he was in the first one, not having seen it, but I know he's in the second one. That's kind of funny in and of itself, too, because, you know, back in the 80s, you know, it was pretty much Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone fighting for all these different action roles in movies. And there's, you know, a movie comes up that somebody wants to do, and Stallone and his people say, yeah, we want to do this movie, and then Arnold Schwarzenegger gets it, or vice versa. And so there was this rivalry, and I seen an interview where Sylvester Stallone said that he hated Arnold Schwarzenegger at one point. Not personally, but professionally, he just hated that Arnold would get these roles and stuff. And so that's pretty cool that they're working together in these movies. See, who else is in these? Of course, Jason Statham. He's actually done quite a bit recently in the last few years. Is in it. I think he's been there through all of it, right? But again, I don't know for sure. I think new to this movie is Wesley Snipes, because in the opening scene of this movie, it's a mission where they break him out of an armored train where he's a prisoner, and he's being taken to a prison in some country out in the middle of nowhere on this train. And so they come in a helicopter and they They have this rescue mission. Sylvester Stallone is the only character that knows who this guy is, and they save him, but not before Wesley Snipes takes control of the gun and shoots the prison that they're going toward and releases all these terrible criminals, you know. It's like, is that really what you want to do there, buddy? But, you know, it's an action movie, so it doesn't matter. Dolph Lundgren, of course. It's great that they were working together. I think he's been in all the movies, too, from the beginning. I don't know all these other guys, but Randy Contour, Terry Crews. So these are all guys that have known. I don't know them, you know, all from action movies because I haven't been in that in a while. Oh, yeah, Antonio Banderas has a role in this, and I don't know if he's been in other movies or not. And then the only other person of note that I know, I guess Jet Li and Ronda Rousey, who's an actual professional wrestler, she was in this movie. And so basically, the plot of this movie is Mel Gibson is the bad guy, which is great. He's perfect in that role. He does a good job. And so he's the bad guy, but they don't know that. So after they rescue Wesley Snipes, they go on this other mission. And they don't know what it's about. They think it's about some missiles or something like that. So they go on this mission. And then, you know, through their rifle scopes or whatever, as they're checking out the scene, Sylvester Stallone's character sees Mel Gibson. He's like, holy crap. I thought this guy was dead. I know he did, you know, because he was a nemesis from years ago that we don't know about. And he's just this terrible guy. And so he's kind of freaked out. And then the mission goes sideways and they get out of there. But one of their guys is killed. And Mel Gibson does it on purpose as a sign to Sylvester Stallone, don't come after me. Of course, Mel Gibson gets away and the rest of them limp away from the fight. And Sylvester Stallone is pretty shaken up by it. He doesn't want to risk the lives of any more of these guys. And he realizes that himself and these other guys are older. And so he decides he doesn't want them involved anymore. He wants to protect them. And so he says, no, we're done. The mission's done. We're not going to do anything. And they're like, hey, man, we got to get this guy. What do you mean we're done? He's like, no, we're done. The team's over. No more Expendables. But on the other side, he goes and recruits a younger team. That's where Ronda Rousey comes in, maybe Jet Li, and a couple other guys that I don't know. So like another four or five people. So now he has a new crew of younger people, and eventually the older guys find out about it, and there's a scene where they come in and, you know, so this is what you're doing kind of thing. Well, anyway, Sylvester Stallone goes after Mel Gibson on his compound. And pretty quickly, things go bad there, too. And his whole new team, these new kids, are captured. Again, Sylvester Stallone survives. And then he has to bring the old crew back. And Kelsey Grammer's also in this. Kelsey Grammer is kind of a guy that, and he might have been in the other movies, too. But he was kind of the recruiter. He recruited the guys for... And so there was a whole montage of where him and Sylvester Stallone were going to meet all these people. And then that's where Banderas comes in, where he wants to be part of the team, but they don't want him and that kind of thing. And I don't know if he's a recurring character or not. I don't think so. But anyway, in the end, the old team goes back with backup. Harrison Ford even comes in. Harrison Ford is like their government liaison or whatever. But he comes in to help. He flies in with a helicopter and helps provide cover on their mission. And eventually it comes down to they've won, except this Mel Gibson's still out there. And Sylvester Stallone and Mel Gibson have this big fight. Sylvester Stallone wins. And everything's good. So that's pretty much the whole plot of the movie. And I don't know, I liked it. You know, again, I'm kind of... half in on it, you know. I'm not like, oh, this is great, and I'm just invested in it. I'm just watching it for probably nostalgia and just, you know, a good mindless action flick. You know, it does have all the tropes and all the machismo or whatever you want to call it. of these bad guys, and it would have fit right in with the 80s. Probably would have thought it was great. And I think it's okay. It's a good movie. Doesn't bother me that I missed the other movies in the franchise. I'm sure they're the same kind of thing. But I enjoyed watching Mel Gibson. I kind of liked seeing Stallone and Schwarzenegger work together. And Harrison Ford is always a good thing. And I'm getting to like Jason Statham. Not that I didn't like him before, but I could take him or leave him. But I've seen him in... Oh, that's another movie I should talk about. Cellular. I'd stumbled upon that. My wife had seen it, but I had never seen it. Anyway, that's a discussion for a different time. But anyway, I've seen him in several things lately. Of course, The Meg and other things. So if you're in for some mindless action fun and you like, you know, you have a nostalgia for some of these actors and you want to see Mel Gibson in a great fun role and see Sly and Schwarzenegger together. It's fun. I enjoyed it.
Where was I? Yes, business is booming, right? A chopper here, a missile there, guns, whatever. When suddenly a competitor, if you can call Uncle Sam a competitor, hires my own team, Barney and the whole gang, to whack me. Things got ugly real fast and a lot of people got dead. 3 former brothers in arms.
You shut your mouth.
3 expendables, our brothers, men we ate with, fought with, bled with, dead. He puts 3 slugs into my chest. Thank God for body armor, even I thought I was dead. And then he boogies out with the casualty. All dead, because you couldn't stay out of my business.
Shut your mouth, Barney! Barney!
Go on, do it! Go on!
What he wants?
If they came out with an Expendables 4, which I think Sylvester Stallone at one point was talking about trying to get a female crew together to do a female action hero Expendables movie. I don't know if that's going to go anywhere. Speaking of which, that brings me to the next movie on my list. Another sequel in a franchise, so to speak, is Ocean's 8. And it's a sequel to Ocean's 11, 12, and 13. Do I have that right? Now, these were famous shows, I don't know, from the 90s and the 2000s, maybe? George Clooney played Danny Ocean, and there was a plethora of stars in the movie. Brad Pitt, Julia Roberts. You know, to be honest, it's kind of funny because I haven't seen any of the Ocean's movies, even the original. So, yeah, because the George Clooney Ocean's 11 was a remake of the Ocean's 11 from, what, the 50s or the 60s? I think it was in the 50s. It was the Rat Pack. You know, it had Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and Sammy Davis Jr. and, you know, that whole gang. And so there was 11 stars at the time that did that. And I haven't seen that original movie. And I haven't seen any of the George Clooney movies. And my wife swears that I've seen them, but I don't remember. You know, I may have seen scenes here and there from those movies, but I never watched them. And I don't know why, because I like heist movies, you know, like, I don't know, I guess the first one that comes to mind is Italian Job. That's one of my favorite heist movies. It's compelling from beginning to end, and it's really good. And I like those kind of movies, and so I don't know why I haven't seen all the other Ocean's movies. But like I was just talking about with the Expendables, you know, Sylvester Stallone wanted to do a female version of the Expendables movies. Well, this is a female version of the Ocean movies. And so the main star of it is Sandra Bullock. She plays Debbie Ocean, who I believe is supposed to be Danny's sister. I don't know if she's ever mentioned in the other movies or not. So that's kind of a strange thing to all of a sudden. Oh, by the way, he had a sister and she's in prison. So I guess we'll talk more about the plot in a minute. The other female co-stars in the movie are Cate Blanchett, Anne Hathaway, Rihanna comes in there. We have Sarah Paulson, Mindy Kaling, Awkwafina, and of course, Helena Bonham Carter. So that's the eight, right? Did I count that right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yes, that is the Ocean's Eight. That is the female lineup for this movie. You know, and it had all the elements of a good heist movie. You know, it had, so like I said, Debbie Ocean gets out of prison. You know, shows her on the parole board and getting out of prison. And then all of a sudden, as soon as she gets out, she goes and shoplifts something at the store and goes to an apartment. And you learn a little bit of the backstory there, where the reason she went to prison was because somebody else stole something, like her partner, a man she was working with, had stolen it with her and then set her up to be the fall woman for it. And that's why she went to prison. And so, you know, I can't remember how many years. She's maybe 20 years, 15 years, I don't know. Well, she's getting out of prison. So she's had all those years in prison to stew and to come up with a plan on how she's going to get him back. And Kate Blanchett, or Lou, is a past acquaintance that's worked with her. And that's the first person she goes to talk about her scheme. Once she gets her buy-in, then they start building their team. What do we need? Who can we use? You know, what's the best thing here? I have to be honest with you, besides Sandra Bullock, Kate Blanchett, and Helena Bonham Carter, I haven't seen these other women in a lot of... Oh, Anne Hathaway, I guess, put her in there. I've seen her in several things as well. I've known about some of the other ones. You know, of course, Rihanna, you know, is a singer wanting to be an actress. Sarah Paulson, I always forget who she is until I see her. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I've seen her in stuff. Well, what stuff did you see her in? I don't know. I think she's in Glass, right? Which I haven't seen that movie yet either. But anyway, so I kind of know Sarah Paulson, but I don't know what I've seen her in before. Mindy Kaling, I know she's newer. I can't remember the movie, The Mindy Project or something like that. Was that her? It sounds right. It's her name. But I never watched it. I've just heard about it. She did she interviewed everybody at Star Wars Celebration a couple years ago. She was kind of the host of it. And so, like I say, I've just heard the name. Awkwafina, yeah, I have no clue. I'm sure she's been in some movies and stuff like that. But anyway, so I don't know. I know probably half of the actresses, and I don't know the other half. But that's fine. I don't have to know everybody, or they don't have to have a storied history. James Corden comes in as the inspector. So after the heist goes down, and the MacGuffin of this heist is this huge diamond necklace worth millions and whatever. Once they steal the necklace and the place that it was borrowed from, the museum or whatever, realizes instantly, you know, the guy comes and inspects it, instantly knows it's a forgery and sounds the alarm or whatever, tells people that it's a fake. And so there's this inspector that comes in investigating, and he's talking to various people. And so that's toward the end part of the movie. But it didn't end as soon as they got the necklace. That went on for a little bit, and you had this part with James Corden coming in to investigate and seeing how things went down. And like I say, there were some good elements. It's all the classic heist stuff. You know, they have to scope out the building. They have to know what the event they're going to do. Basically, Anne Hathaway plays an actress who's going to this some kind of a big benefit at the museum where they're going to have dinner. And of course, you know, she's in competition with all of the other stars as to who's going to wear the best outfit and have the most dazzling jewelry and all this kind of crappy Hollywood stuff. And so, you know, everybody's looking for a stylist. So they know somebody who's a stylist, which is Helena Bonham Carter. And so they get her in on it and figure out how they're going to get her to wear that necklace to this benefit. And I believe, it's been a little bit since I watched it, but I think her boyfriend at the time, Anne Hathaway's boyfriend, is the ex-partner of Debbie Ocean, who she wants to get revenge on. And so basically at the end, she's trying to pin it on him that he took Lana. Actually, I think he did. She was successful. Spoilers, everybody. If you haven't watched it by now, I don't know. You probably don't care if I spoil it for you. And if you end up watching it later, you'd probably forget what I'm talking about anyway. But anyway, they get her to wear this necklace to the event. And then they make her sick and make her, and then she has to go to the bathroom. When she's in the bathroom puking, Awkwafina, I think, comes and takes it away. And then it's missing when she comes out of the bathroom. And then they plant it in a fountain or something like that. But, you know, there's all these ticking parts that, all the cogs in the wheel that have to be just right and everybody's staged right. And, of course, Debbie Ocean is there, but she can't be anywhere near the action because, of course, everybody's going to suspect her because she's a thief and is now out of prison. So she's going to be the prime suspect. So they have to do everything they can with, you know, video footage. And so she's more of a diversion. You know, she's using that infamy or whatever to be a distraction from the real culprit rather than being involved, right? And so they carefully plan that out and they're successful. We learn later that the Anne Hathaway character, who he just kind of thought was a ditzy Hollywood celebrity that didn't have a clue, she did kind of figure out what was going on and had approached Lou and Debbie and said, hey, I want in on this kind of thing. But we didn't learn that until after everything went down. And then, you know, I think it ends up with the ex-partner does get, you know, she pretty much sets him up to be the patsy for this, and he goes to prison. And I don't know if you can tell from how I'm talking about it, but I don't know if it was because it was later at night or I wasn't in the mood for it or whatever, but I found it kind of boring. It was kind of slow. And of course, it's a heist movie. There's going to be lots of planning, lots of talking. It's not like it's an action show. I wasn't expecting it to be. But for some reason, I was just kind of bored by it. And I hate saying that because as soon as I say that, people say, well, if it would have been the all-male cast, then you would have liked it better. But because it was girls, you didn't like it because it was girls. Which is totally false. I mean, I'm all for a girl movie. That sounds odd. I don't mean it in any bad way. But yeah, I don't care if it's a bunch of actresses or a bunch of male actors. You know, it doesn't matter if it's a good story. Unless I have, you know, that hidden bias that everybody tells me I've got that I'm unaware of. But yeah, I guess I don't give it a high review. It's kind of a mediocre film, in my opinion. It was fun. It was good. You know, it had all those elements in it. And I can't compare it. That's the thing. I can't say, oh, it's a really disappointment compared to the other Ocean movies because I haven't seen them. So I can't really even compare it to something and say, well, this is better because, or Ocean's 8 wasn't as good because, blah, blah, blah. And maybe I need to watch it again, and maybe I'd be in a better mood for it. But, yeah, that's my take on it at this point.
What were you doing here? I thought you were in jail.
I got out. Look at all this. I thought you were tired.
I did?
Not as exciting as hijacking trucks that are smuggling dishwashers from Canada, right?
Yeah, well, I don't do that anymore.
Yeah, so. But you were so very good at it.
Thank you.
Yeah. So these are all for personal use, right?
What do you want?
Just wanna reconnect.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Reconnect?
Mm-hmm. You're not bored out here, are you, Tam Tam?
No, I'm not bored out here at all.
Good.
No.
Good.
Why would you ask that?
Because I need a fence.
Well, I told you I don't do that anymore. I'm out.
It's a big job.
I don't care.
Do you want me to tell you how big a job
No,
is?
I know I really don't.
I think I'm going to tell you how big the job is.
Are you kidding?
No.
Mommy, when's dinner ready?
Sweetheart, I will be right there. I'm so sorry. Mommy will be right there.
But I'm hungry.
I know, sweetheart. Sweetheart, I promise I will be right there. Explain all this to your husband.
eBay.
So yeah, I don't know. It's kind of I've gone from like one of the greatest movies I've seen in a while in Creed 2 all the way to, it was all right. Not that great. And then I guess maybe Expendables 3. That's kind of another disposable movie. I guess I did like Ocean's 8 better than I did Expendables 3. I guess because there's more thought in it and more intrigue rather than just kind of the dumb action going on. Even though it's fun, I think I did enjoy Ocean's 8 better than I did Expendables 3. So there you go. I don't like everything. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll come back again, I'm sure. And we'll find out what else is strewn along the path. Goodbye now. Strewn Along the Path is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. Don't change it, don't sell it, and let people know where you got it from. Thanks. I appreciate it. In the middle of all this other crisis that's going on with the fighting, and where was I going with that?